On this week's episode of the Wealth Collective podcast, we take a look at the importance of asset allocation. Enjoy.
Everything we talk about on today's podcast is general advice only because we don't know your individual personal situation. Before you act on anything we've spoken about, you should chat to your financial advisor, and if you don't have one, feel free to reach out to us. Now, on to today's show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Wealth Collective podcast. It's Pete Pennicott here. No special guest in the studio, but a very special gentleman is sitting across from me, Zach Masters. How are you doing?
Very good, Pete. How are you?
Pretty good. I saw big week at the footy. Your beloved Crows got done by the Hawks.
Yeah, I think after we scored just one goal in the first quarter to the seven, I just turned that off and think I had a nap or something like that. Just don't worry about the footy for the rest of the week.
But in other things, like you had a very successful podcast. So the property one really hit a note with people. So really high on the ratings.
That's it. I can't claim too much of that success. I think most of that was Andrew. Dade, I think he was spoke really well. It was an interesting topic. Obviously, people are not worried at the moment, but interested in what's happening in the property market.
Yeah, well, definitely anecdotally, I am speaking to more and more people, and that is just part of the conversation, the barbecue talk at the moment about property prices, interest rates. So, no, I think it was timely.
That's it. He's a good marketer getting it out there. I heard a few people that he got a text from them and said, "Oh, I had to listen to your voice, Zach, on the weekend." A few of my mates that had used him in the past. So, it was very, very good. But what are we going to talk about today?
Property is a part of this. What we're going to talk about is asset allocation. So when we're thinking about asset allocation, it's going to touch all different aspects of your life, your personal investments, but also your superannuation assets as well and how they're invested. So asset allocation, in simple terms, is how you allocate your investments across a different range of assets and asset classes. And you think about it like, if you had four different assets and you could divide it by four and go 25% in each, or you might stack it and go, I've got 50% in one and the rest I'm going to sort of spread across the other assets as well. So these, we try and sort of break this down at the first level to go growth assets, so risky assets like shares and property, and defensive assets, so a lower risk, and things like bonds, fixed interest, term deposits and cash fall into that bucket. And that's probably the starting point to go, hey, well, the traditional portfolio, the balanced fund, used to be a 60-40 split between those assets. But it doesn't just stop there. What you need to do, there's within shares, there's Australian shares, there's global equities, there's hedged, there's unhedged, there's property, there's listed, there's unlisted. So there's a whole host of complexities we won't really get into today. But it is one of those cornerstone foundation building blocks that helps you sort of make a decision about how to best construct and manage your portfolio. So there's been a lot of studies talking about how important this is as part of a robust portfolio. Zach, why is asset allocation so important, or is it important?
Yeah, so one of those studies that was done was Vanguard did a study. So Vanguard's obviously, most people have heard of Vanguard, and they found out that asset allocation accounts for about 88% of volatility and return. So what that means is that your experience with investing and being in the share market will be very consistent with others that are diversified along the same risk profile as you. So that means that, in other words, that asset allocation matters a lot more than stock picking, essentially. So it's not so much what you choose to invest in, but what asset classes rather than what individual assets you have in those classes. So I think that's something that you need to be quite aware of. So it's a massive importance.
I think it's definitely significant. I'm actually doing an in-depth portfolio construction piece of study at the moment. I had point was very much criticized, called utter rubbish, this 90% mark.
90%?
The Brinson study. It compares it against sort of the alternative of having it in nothing at all, so just having it under the mattress.
Right.
But it is really important nonetheless. So you did contend it's probably a little bit less than 90, but it's sort of still somewhere above 50%, but who knows. But it is good marketing though. Just get you thinking about it. And Vanguard are strategic asset allocation managers. So, but I think why I brought that up is it is one of those things where it is, no one's disputing the importance, but it is that contentious thing about you can approach this a problem and take different data out of it and interpret it different ways. And I think that thing of what Vanguard does is talks about the power of getting it right and sort of focusing on that. And it gives you a sort of a really rock steady place to start your portfolio construction journey on.
Yeah. And I think even when you look at the times we're in at the moment, so the things that like that, that study and things don't take into account is if you're allocated, you know, riskier than what your tolerance for risk is and you're outside of your, what your asset allocation should be for your tolerance, then times like this, you hear people selling out and making mistakes and doing things like that because they're too stressed. They're not invested as they should be, and they might be allocated far too much towards growth. Or on the other side, you might have, you know, people that don't necessarily understand what the risk and return ratios are, and then investing in something that's far too conservative for what their goals may be as well. So it has the potential, like the asset allocation, that's why I think it is really important, because it could be the potential between hitting your goals and not hitting your goals.
And I think it's a good thing because you can really, you can quite simply bring together, and it's simple to do something about it. But you know, you can track it quite easily. Go, I know I've got this much allocated to Australian equities versus global, or I've got this much in property, I've got this much in defensive assets. So it is one of those things that as a individual investor, you do have great control over. So you can influence this, you can understand it, you can log into your super fund and see what investment option am
that's
I
that
in?
Pie chart with all the colours on it. Yeah. Usually a lot of the time, that's the easiest way to look at it for listeners out there.
If you're a visual person, I do like the table because sometimes the old pie chart can
it's
be
the
a
data,
bit,
man.
Yeah. Well, the table's just easier to interpret simply. So, but it is that thing of going, what you're trying to understand is, what is the least amount of risk that I can take for the return that I'm seeking? And I think that's the challenge of going, understanding your objectives first, and what are your goals for the portfolio? So then you can start to go, what's the appropriate asset allocation for me?
Yeah. So how do you do that with clients? So when you're talking about different asset allocations, so people might have heard, you know, balanced, growth, conservative, all these different types of risk profiles, and then that risk profile then obviously aligns with a certain asset allocation. Well, that's the way we do it here. So how do you do it when you're catching up with clients for the first, or meeting clients for the first time and trying to work out what their asset allocation should be?
Yeah, well, I think the big thing is risk tolerance, because I think Mike Tyson said it best, didn't he? Like, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. Yeah. And I think now is probably a good time to revisit your asset allocation, because everyone's happy with volatility until it's negative volatility.
Yeah.
So that risk tolerance question is an important one, because what we can do is look back at historical data as a guide to go, hey, if you've got this much invested in growth assets and this much in defensive, how's this likely to behave?
Yeah.
And you can get in the weeds and go look underneath those, but I think the main decision is like growth versus defensive is probably that fundamental decision. So say if someone goes, oh, I'm comfortable and I'm not going to panic if there's a 20% drop, they might have a different portfolio to someone that says, I'm going to likely feel highly stressed if I see a 10% drop in my portfolio value. And that'll shape how much we're going to put in bonds and fixed interest versus equities. You know, so equities might be plus or minus 50%. And we're seeing that in probably within the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Over a rolling 12-month period. And sort of fixed income, you know, probably interesting times at the moment where we've got a negative percent fixed income return. But most of the time it'll be plus or minus 10%. So you can sort of see there that the volatility matrix will start to help you shape what's an appropriate allocation you've got to growth assets. And then you map it to one of those profiles. And it's a bit of a crude way of doing it, but I guess we need some sort of tools to make this a simple process for people to understand. So it doesn't mean that's one size fits all, because within a balanced profile or a 60% growth profile, you might have different preferences of going, hey, I don't want to support these types of companies or
ethical concerns.
Yeah. Or I've got a lot of property in my personal name, but I want to add that to my super fund.
Yeah, I've got an offset account that, you know, I've got a large amount sitting in the offset account. So should that be taken into account as well?
Yeah. So that's sort of fundamental one, that risk tolerance question. And then it's that, what are your goals? What are your objectives? How long are they? What are your timeframes? So then you start to go, overlay that personal experience. What are we trying to achieve with the portfolio? And that helps us go, is this asset allocation going to help that person or myself achieve the goal that I'm after? Because if it's going to fail that test, then we probably need to revisit and go, is this a realistic objective or goal? Or am I just setting myself up for failure? Because you might need to take, you might not be comfortable with more risk, but it might be that thing of going, well, if you don't take it, you're guaranteeing failure.
And I think that's the one of the important parts is it can be, you know, and just people that it might just be getting started investing might be lower on the risk profile potentially because they've never invested before or are unsure. And then if you have something that say you need a, you know, you need to try and generate a 6% return to get towards your goal and you're going to be invested in 20% equities and or 20% growth and 80% defensive, that mightn't necessarily match up. So that's where you need to kind of have the decision around looking at that. And then that's where we look at the historical data of going like, what's the type of return that we can kind of expect in the past? Obviously, we can't always look at history as the most accurate representation of what's going to happen, but it gives us a good guide of kind of the bands that we can play with.
Yeah. So you're looking at extremes and then you're looking at sort of where, how do these assets behave? And, you know, the challenges with new asset classes, like if you had... Well, I don't know if it's an asset class, but things like cryptocurrency and the things on the fringe or like,
yeah,
even alternatives like infrastructure assets used to be very hard to gain access to. You know, we've got a limited track record of what they look like in a, in their listed form. So I think that is that the data is, you know, very, very long with some asset classes and very, very short with others. So you just need to peel that back and go, how can we best make an assumption of what's going to happen in the future, all things being equal. So, but yeah, it doesn't always mean you need to ratchet up risk. It might be that you don't need to take much risk because you're going to achieve your objective. So why take it? So it is that thing of going, it might mean you dial it back.
Yeah, and do you feel that it should, like your asset allocation should change with your age? Is age irrelevant to asset allocation? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, so you're only as old as you feel. So my calendar age, was it? Is that the term versus my biometric age? Yeah. So, like, I think it's a factor because your goals and objectives and your timeframes change. But doesn't necessarily mean the older you get, the more conservative you need to get. You might be in a stronger financial position, so you have more capacity to take risk. And, you know, depending on what you're interested in, that might be more suitable. But generally speaking, as you get older, your time frame, your ability to recover from market declines, yeah, it becomes shorter naturally because you're getting closer to the finish line. So I do think, in general, people do get slightly more conservative. But I think it's overdone a little bit in terms of people forget that once they enter retirement, you're hopefully going to be there enjoying it for decades.
Yeah.
That's not a, you know, if you go back 50 years ago, you're probably in retirement for sort of, you know, 10 to 15 active years.
Especially with the way the cash rate is at the moment as well. You can't necessarily be expecting to get huge returns from just leaving your money in fully defensive
assets. Yeah, and that's the thing of going, you just need to understand, like, what risk are you required to take to achieve it? What are you comfortable with? And risk is not just one thing. It's the return side as well. Like, you know, what are you trying to achieve? And trying to make sure that the diversification, and that's what I think, that's the thing that we need to make sure people understand. The whole point of asset allocation is to build diversification into your returns.
Yeah.
So they behave differently. And I, you know, don't want to use financial terms too much on a podcast, but correlation is what you're looking for. How much do these different assets behave like each other? And what you want to do is get assets that behave very differently to each other, ideally. Like, so they're not going to track in the same direction. So think of it like, so in simple terms, like if something's got a perfect correlation with something, it's like plus one.
Yeah.
So it means if it goes up by 1%, the asset B goes up by 1%, and vice versa. If it goes down by 1%, they go down. You know, perfect negative correlation. If one goes up by 1%, the other one goes down. So, and what you want is probably something in between those things. To go, hey, these are unrelated sources of return. So think of it like it probably is not going to be like, what's happening in the US stock market is not necessarily going to influence Australian property prices directly.
Yeah.
They may have some correlation where they're going to behave because they're both impacted by global economies, but they're going to behave differently. So you can get some benefits in terms of managing, like reducing your risk and still achieving a reasonable return. So I think that's the thing you're looking for. And it is part art, part science.
Yeah.
So it's not just tables and pie charts.
Definitely. And then obviously in times like we're in at the moment, so, you know, bear market in the US and potentially a lot of doom and gloom news out there. One of the main things we often get talked about is, you know, or should I bring my asset allocation down? Like, should I have more defensive in my portfolio at the moment? Or on the flip side, some people are going, you know, should I increase my allocation towards growth? So what's your overall thoughts on how do you... operate within your asset allocation in times like these?
Yeah, look, it depends on what your asset allocation strategy is. So are you a static asset allocation? Is that what you've chosen to be?
And by static, for the listeners out there?
What do you mean? Like you set it in, it's set in stone. So you go, hey, this is how I'm going to allocate. I'm going to be 60% growth and 40% defensive, and I'm going to be like that. That's what I'm going to be until the end of time. So nothing changes. It's the simplest in theory. It's probably one of the most difficult ones to actually do in reality. So you think about with a static asset allocation strategy, you're going to participate fully in the bull markets, but also fully in the bear market. And you're going to basically say, well, it doesn't matter what's happening. I'm just going to keep holding. And then you're going to basically sell your best performing assets and top up your worst performing assets consistently.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. Very hard to do in reality because you sort of got to hold your nerve and go, trust the process. And I don't know how that's been working for the Philadelphia 76ers. But, and then you have a look at the other ones where it's a little bit more of an active approach to asset allocation. That's tactical and dynamic asset allocation. And the difference with those is they get adjusted based on the future forecasts of where whoever's adjusting the asset allocation thinks things are going to go and their relative value. So if they're thinking US equities are overpriced relative to European equities, then they would adjust how much you allocate to either of those. Or they're thinking property is undervalued relative to the 10-year treasury. So those decisions get made and will generally be adjusted either on a monthly, a quarterly, and annually, but some more frequent than a static is the sort of takeaway from those. So if you've decided you're a static investor, then you don't just throw that out because there's market volatility and go chop and change, because that's the worst thing you can do. Like, you know, you've chosen a path, you need to stick with it. Because otherwise you'll fall into all the behavioral traps of going, you end up buying high and selling low, because you shouldn't just be changing your strategy just because of what's happening in the macro environment. If you're tactical, if you're dynamic, well, yeah, you probably should be adjusting what's happening in your asset allocation based on where you see value, because you don't want to waste a crisis. So you do want to make sure you're not shying away from volatility. It's actually a friend. This is, you know, when managed well and while you're disciplined through it, this is how you can do, really add to your long-term returns. And you've got an advantage over large investors because you as an individual, providing you can hold your nerve, you don't need to sort of chop and change with the whims of a big group. You can make decisions on, you know, relative to what you're comfortable with and what's appropriate for your goals. But the other thing to look at is going, I don't think it's the time to, you know, do you just ratchet up your risk profile because things are down? No, I think there's more to it.
But on the flip side, it's the other side as well, is a lot of those people are going, oh, like, should we, like, the market's dropped, like, should we be moving down a risk profile and be a bit more defensive in times like this?
Well, I think same thing applies. Like, I think that your long-term strategy shouldn't be altered or changed based on what's happening in the short term with market volatility. Like, is it a surprise to you that there's volatility in your portfolio?
No, I think it comes back to, like, at the start, when you do that risk profile, like, you go through, like, what are the average returns or what are the, you know, outlying returns for this in the past? So you kind of hopefully understanding and going, okay, if I'm in a balanced portfolio, like, maybe negative 30% is the, you know, something that's would have been experienced for a portfolio like this in the past. So then when you get a year like this, you should be going, okay, like, this was in the bands of what I initially felt it was going to be, but it's different when it does happen.
Yeah, I was being a bit facetious. Like, obviously, you'd tell everyone knows this could happen.
Yeah.
When you see...
When you actually experience it.
Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands changing in your portfolio, either positive or negative, there's reasons why there's millions and millions and millions of studies about behavioral finance. It's because it's really hard to control your urges. So you do feel more fear, and we do associate a much bigger weighting. Like, we sort of, it's much bigger significance, a loss as well compared to a gain. So a negative 20% result on the negative is seen and felt a lot more significantly than a 20% gain.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's plenty of studies to prove that. We're not going to go into depth on that. Just trust us that is the case. And if you're living through it at the moment, you're probably well aware. Yeah. the euphoria is not the same as the concern on the flip side. So it is that thing of going, you need to not chop and change. But, you know, you'd like to think if you are comfortable, this is the time when you reassess your risk profile and ask yourself the same questions you did when things were good. Because sometimes you didn't really know what your appropriate risk tolerance was until you've lived through it. And you might find going, hey, I'm not actually worried about what's happening in the market now, or I am worried about it. This is not great. I'm losing sleep over it. That's not good. Yep. So we need to sort of revisit that and then work on a pathway out of it. And it might not just be a knee-jerk reaction, but it might be something where you go, hey, we're going to manage out of this. And then when we get to that point where the market sort of gets back to where it was several years ago, we might sort of change the way we manage the portfolio going forward. But don't just stick your head in the sand.
And what about for clients that are in drawdown phase, so needing to, you know, sell down investments to fund income for them? So in times like these, may their asset allocations potentially get out of whack if they're running a bucketing strategy or something like that? Or
well, not yet. It shouldn't be. Like, so you're only 6-7 months into a market downturn. So, and you're coming off the back of some really good market performance last year. So you shouldn't be out of whack. Like, the bucket is generally a separate strategy, and we're sort of going into individual strategies here a little bit. But overall, I think you always need to be revisiting it. So you should be reviewing your asset allocation and your strategy for asset allocation on an annual basis. And that's just like a bit of financial hygiene health check. Income is still being generated by investments. Capital growth definitely is challenged. And now is the, you know, how do you manage the portfolio and how do you sort of batten down the hatches to ride through this period of volatility? Because this is not the first time people in, or maybe it is for if you've just entered drawdown phase, it might be the first time you've seen it in drawdown phase. But if you've been invested for any reasonable period of time, this is not, not something we haven't seen before, not something we're not going to see again. So you need to get used to it. And the good thing is, treat this as a really big learning experience and get to know thyself through this period and understand how you can, I guess, best make use of this when it happens again in the future. So, don't chop and change. Don't flip-flop based on sort of whims of what's happening in the market, or just because market's down 25% doesn't mean it can't go down further. And doesn't mean sort of it could get any worse either. Like, you don't, there's no sort of crystal ball. So I think a lot of the time, the best course of action is going, if you had got your asset allocation right from the start, if you got that growth to defensive right, then you shouldn't really change that too much. What I would say is, what you might start to adjust is, underneath the growth to defensive asset allocation, you know, how much do you have to all those different sub-asset classes?
Yeah.
So how much do you have to equities and the different areas of equities? Because they've been punished differently. So,
international US tech and, different things.
Yeah,
like
even if you look at the indices, and you mentioned the NASDAQ there, which is sort of a lot of those high growth tech versus the S&P 500 versus ASX 200. So, they've behaved differently. So you might sort of reallocate and massage that. And that's probably something I'd be more comfortable with as a starting point for people to
It comes back to what you talked about a few episodes ago too, the tax loss harvesting or different things like that as well, and just reallocating. Still in line with you.
Well, I heard there was some TikTok advice was going on. Oh, nah, side one that was telling people to not only just tax loss harvest, but just buy back the same asset straight away, which is actually that is a false foul of the ATO's rules. So just be sort of mindful about where you're getting your advice from. So,
on that note, is there anything else that you'd add in when your listeners are thinking about asset allocation before we end?
No, I think that covered a fair bit of it. Like, if anyone's sort of not sure about where they sit, like, we've got some tools that they could run themselves through at no cost. We're happy to share those links for them to do the profile themselves and self-analyze the data. If you want to have a chat, feel free to reach out to either of us. But hopefully that's provided some insights and helped you make some decisions about how to better manage your asset allocation.
Awesome. So as always, if you've got any questions or you're interested in hearing more about risk profiles or doing that, what Pete mentioned, email us at connect@picada.com.au. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you.